A very warm welcome to all our listeners on cliffcentral.com. You're listening to Professor David Block, and the program is entitled Looking Up with David Block. Some contact details, please feel free to reach me today. A most exciting lineup we have for you. The direct telephone number is 0861 555 189. That's 0861 555 189. The Twitter handle is at cliffcentral.com, Instagram Cliff Central, Facebook Cliff Central, and the WeChat ID also Cliff Central. My Twitter handle is at Starry Galaxy Man, at Starry Galaxy Man. And if you'd like to contact me via my webpage, it's www.davidblock.co.za. It is an extreme pleasure today on cliffcentral.com to have as our guest the Vice Chancellor of the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, Professor Adam Habib, whom I believe we have on the line right now. Welcome to you, Adam.
Not there yet.
Professor Habib is not quite online yet, but what we'll be discussing, of course, is the landscape of South African universities. I think each one of us as parents has got dreams for our children, and those dreams include helping to ignite their candles. Plutarch said that the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lit. Allow me to repeat that again. Plutarch said, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lit. And I suppose that's the central theme on my cliffcentral.com broadcast every weekday, every Tuesday rather, is how do we actually ignite our very passions? And I want to chat to our Vice Chancellor, Professor Adam Habib, about the very landscape of South African universities. For example, is it necessary to send our children, if they have a certain dream or passion, to Harvard University, or to Caltech, or to Princeton University, or to Yale University? These are crucial questions. Or should our children stay on in the land of South Africa? And so I had decided that there is certainly no one better within this country to answer these sorts of questions than Professor Habib. While we wait for him to arrive at his office desk, I do want to stress that one always does tend to feel that going overseas has got definite advantages for lighting one's passion. For example, one might think of the crime scenario. One might think of the very standards of level of lectureship. Is it better for one of one's students to actually participate at some of the great giant universities such as Cambridge University or Oxford University? How well I remember lecturing at Cambridge University and just being steeped in history, walking past these gargantuan buildings with their creepers, with their ferns, and there's just this ethos of Paul Dirac and other great giants, having lectured to one in the past. It is just simply steeped in academic history, in pioneerism. It is cut with a cloth of the very first ilk. And so questions we will be discussing with Professor Habib, our Vice Chancellor, today at the University of the Witwatersrand, are the landscapes of South African universities. Do we need to necessarily travel abroad? His views on family, his views on leadership, his visions for Africa and South Africa, how to attract some of the legendary giants.
Well, Professor David Block, I'm sorry to interrupt your show, but I thought I'd pop in while I was here.
Thank you, Gareth.
And to get chatting, because I know we're trying to get Professor Habib. Apparently he's in a meeting, but he'll be on the phone in a moment or two. I actually had him on my show a while ago.
Yes.
And he was talking about how Wits is how well Wits is doing in terms mm-hmm. of growing its master's and postgraduate
yes.
numbers. Yes. It's really trying to be one of those universities that focuses on the very summit yes. of good education.
Absolutely, Gareth. And the important thing there, the very important point that you've raised, is that he's trying to attract some of the very best scientists in South Africa and from overseas to Johannesburg, to Wits University. And the way this works is as follows. Scientists are rated by their international peers. So in other words, it's not a local procedure, it's a global procedure. So in other words, a science professor A puts in to be rated. And then you get peer A, B, C, D, and E from Harvard or Yale or Celtic and so on to rate you. And then based on those ratings, you are assigned the A is the best, or a B, or a C, and thus forth.
Have you been rated?
I am in the process.
I've
never ever needed to be rated, Gareth. But certainly at the age of 60 now, they've said to me, Prof, we think it is time that you do consider being rated, because if you're not rated, it's very hard to carry on past the 65th year. And so what Adam is doing, Professor Habib, is he's trying to attract dozens of A-rated scientists to Wits University. This is a budget which involves millions upon millions of rands. But what it will really mean is that to our postgrads, Gareth, these people will be exposed, our MSc or PhD students, to legendary giants in the field. And I think that is absolutely awesome in this country, to think that A-rated scientists cut of the very top class will actually be able to sit at the feet of these giants.
Now, short of cutting your show to the point, you interviewed a while ago Clem Sunter,
yes.
who I thought was fascinating, and he said some very positive things. He said some worrying things too.
He did.
But there are obviously things we need to be concerned about in any country in mm-hmm. the world. Mm-hmm. But I think you've almost answered your own question in this, because you've just said that they're going to attract the best scientists and
yes.
the best lecturers in,
yes.
in the world
yes.
to Wits, so that people who want to study can study here without having to leave the country. I think that's a very optimistic approach, and I think it's probably a good reason to hang around.
Gareth, you know, it's one of the few reasons, really, to hang around. Because as Clem Sunter said, and that was very worrying when he said that to me, there's a 25% chance that South Africa could head toward a failed state. But the good news is that there's a 75% chance still that we'll actually succeed. And given that Clem said that there's a 75% chance to succeed, I think that that's just simply awesome. Because what it really means, Gareth, is that if we do things right, we will succeed. If we do not do anything, we will become a failed state, as Clem Sunter said. And I think this is absolutely critical, Gareth.
But thank you, Prof.
Thank you so much. Today, it's my great pleasure and privilege to welcome not only one of South Africa's greatest political scientists to Central Stage, but one of the world's most highly respected political scientists, Professor Adam Habib, the Vice Chancellor at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. You are listening to Professor David Block. The program is entitled Looking Up with David Block. Adam, it is a singular joy to know that you are finally with me. Welcome.
Thank you very much, David. I'm sorry I'm late.
We were concerned that briefly the Habib family had emigrated to Pluto, but we were very relieved that you are still on terra firma. Now, Adam, just to kick off, the landscape of South African universities is something which, of course, is of central concern to all our listeners. One thinks of students wanting to go overseas, for example, to Harvard or to Princeton or to Yale University or to Cambridge or to Oxford and so on. I'm reminded, Adam, of a very famous quote, which you'd know well, by Marcel Proust, saying the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. And I believe that you have come to Wits to give us a pair of new eyes. I sincerely believe that. Please lead us through for our listeners how you feel South African universities compare on the global stage.
So, I just had a conversation with City Press earlier on, and one of the things that we were talking about was the quality of our graduates from our university.
Yes.
And I was saying to them that if you go to Boston, I went about a year ago, I was in Boston to speak to our alumni.
Yes.
And in the middle of Boston, in a blizzardy evening, we called an alumni meeting and had about 100 South Africans that were in the middle of Boston, that were working in Boston. About 70 to 80% of them were in the medical fraternity of one kind or the other.
Yes.
And I was at one level quite sad that we had lost so many of our graduates. By the way, not only in the 70s and 80s, including in the 90s and in the 2000s. And I was sad that we had lost so many to Boston.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, the fact that they are working in public health facilities in Boston,
yes,
is a sign that the value of our graduates is appreciated by other countries.
Yes.
And if you go to London, if you go to China, you go to India, you go to Paris, you go to Canada, the same thing you'll find mm-hmm. amongst our engineers, mm-hmm. amongst our doctors, mm-hmm. amongst our scientists at multiple levels. So
yes.
I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we think that South African universities are not quality driven. I think we're producing some of the best graduates
yes.
that one can imagine.
Yes.
I think, however, we do have big challenges.
Yes.
I think that our universities are not of equal quality.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we do not invest in our universities appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
The Minister of Higher Education did a study last year in which was chaired by the Deputy President, I might add.
Yes.
And that found that we underinvested in the university by about 14 billion rand, 15 billion rand.
Mm.
That's a tragedy
yes.
for the government that is committed to producing more graduates and committed to producing a knowledge-based economy.
Yes.
So I think we have a debate about transformation, and I think that's important, but we don't understand what that means and how do we ground that
yes.
in a more cosmopolitan world and in a world
yes.
that is tied to ensuring that we produce quality graduates. I think we have to have hard debates about this. I do think, however, and my children are at the stage when they will go to university.
Yes.
I am convinced that the top end of the South African university spectrum produces some of the best graduates
yes.
in the world. And I think it will continue to do so.
Now, Adam, of course, we are very well aware, as you say, that we produce absolutely top-class graduates. I've met some in the Boston area, Harvard, where I often visit. But what I'd like to ask you is this. We also need to retain a certain number of our graduates at university to enable them to mentor our most precious leaders of tomorrow, entering at the first, second, and third year, and then honors and so forth. How do you personally believe, wearing your hat as Vice Chancellor of the University of the Witwatersrand, how do you personally believe one can avoid a brain drain, which has certainly occurred, for example, whenever I visit Australia?
So I do think there's two ways that we have to do this. I think the first is where we have quality professors, we have to retain them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to retain them, we need to do a couple of things. We need to pay them adequately.
Mm-hmm.
We may need to create an enabling environment where they are appreciated, that they like being in the university.
Yes.
And then they must be able to afford what I call, they must be in a society which they not continuously threatened in.
Yes.
Those three things, if you don't do that, we fix them,
yes.
you're never going to retain no. your top talent.
No.
So with addressing them, we're addressing the remuneration at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
In the enabling environment, we're not doing enough.
Mm.
Because if you speak to a professor today, there are too many demands on monitoring. There are too many demands to fill administrative forms.
Yes.
You spend too little time doing the kinds of teaching and research that
yes.
you need to be doing.
Yes.
And so the environment is not as enabling as it used to be. And that many of them are worried. They're worried about violent crime. They're worried about the stability of the society. And so for me, if we want to retain these people,
yes,
then we have to address those three things.
Yes.
On the opposite end, however, I also think we need to create a pipeline.
Yes.
A new group of people mm-hmm. coming through the system mm-hmm. that will sustain the system.
Yes.
And that means we need to provide scholarships, because you can't be good professors.
Yes.
If you don't have good senior lecturers and lecturers.
Exactly.
You can't have mm-hmm. good senior lecturers and mm-hmm. lecturers mm-hmm. if you don't have good master's students and PhD mm-hmm. students. Mm-hmm. And so we need to create the pipeline. And that requires scholarships that we need to provide.
Yes.
Then we need to provide openings in our university system to employ these people.
Yes.
And then give them an enabling environment so that they eventually can become the professors of tomorrow.
Yes.
And if we don't address this at the pipeline level,
mm-hmm.
and at the retention level,
mm-hmm.
we're never going to succeed mm-hmm. in keeping our universities world-class.
Now, my guest on Looking Up with David Block today is the legendary Professor Adam Habib, who I regard as one of the world's really legendary foremost political scientists. And certainly having him at Wits University is an experience which I personally cannot adequately describe. He comes with new vision, he comes with new leadership, he comes with awesome new ideas. And Adam, I'd just like to ask you, you've just mentioned that the government is perhaps under-investing by something like 14 billion rand or so on. How can one actually change, do you believe, the perception of government to actually feed in a lot more a financial flow? Because after all, you've cut the nerve here, is that if you're going to be paid X at university Y and another salary, a higher one at another university, you'll clearly end up there. So how does one address this pay issue and then the issue of this gross underinvestment by government?
Well, you know, at one level, I think it's important to understand that some of our institutions, we're beginning to pay. So for instance, on the top end of our system, we're beginning to address the issue of salaries and make our salaries more competitive, etc.
Yes.
We've also, in our negotiations with the unions at Wits, at least, have committed to being one of the better paying universities in the
mm-hmm.
country.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are taking that very seriously in our negotiations and planning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it comes with hard choices. It
yes.
means we have to cut elsewhere.
Yes.
But we think having a well-remunerated academy is important for achieving
yes.
our overall goals, and therefore we're doing that. The second thing is, I think we need a very serious conversation with government.
Yes.
And I said this earlier on to the City Press, that my problem is that government wants a world-class education system,
mm-hmm.
but it's never prepared to pay for it.
Yes.
It's never prepared to make the hard choices that are required to undertake that investment.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's going to have to make those choices. We're going to have to have a hard conversation with the Deputy President, the President. You want to be a knowledge-based economy.
Yes.
Well, you can't be a knowledge-based economy if you don't have high production of skills and you don't have high production of research. It doesn't work.
Absolutely.
And high production of skills and research is going to require massive investments into the university system.
Yes.
At the moment, we spend less than 1% of GDP.
Yes.
On research.
That's incredible.
But, if you go to South Korea, they spend more than 3%
mm-hmm.
of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're serious, if we're really serious about who we want to be
yes.
and about being world-class and a knowledge-based economy,
yes.
then we're going to have a very serious conversation, both at the corporate elite, amongst those CEOs on the JSE,
yes.
and amongst some of those ministers at the cabinet.
Yes.
Because at the moment, they treat the university as if it's another factory.
Yes.
If you need the same skill sets, we have the train transformation targets, we have all of the same things, as if this is a normal institution.
Yes.
I want to say clearly,
yes.
a university is a very, very special institution.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And it has to be regarded as
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Now, my guest today is Professor Adam Habib, Vice Chancellor at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. And I'd like to ask you, Adam, at universities such as Harvard, the alumni love to give millions of dollars, sometimes a little more, and they love to have for example, halls named after them, lecture venues named after them, and so on. There's a huge, as you know, their funds are in the billions of dollars at some of the Ivy League universities. Now, in South Africa, I've just noted, having been at WITS for over 30 years, that one doesn't have the same culture of giving at that level within South Africa. What do you personally think the reason for that is, Adam?
Well, I think that there are two reasons for that. Firstly, I think that part of the reason in the United States there's such a giving culture and a philanthropic culture.
Yes.
Is because the tax system allows for it. So, for instance,
I see.
If you give R1 billion to Harvard, and Harvard is seen, even though it's a private university, is seen as the third sector, as an NGO, if you like.
Yes.
Then effectively what happens is the person who gives R1 billion
yes.
can get a tax write-off.
Yes.
Effectively for a significant amount of that R1 billion.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, it makes sense for those citizens to make the investments that they can
yes.
into the kind of university system, etc.
Yes.
And given the fact that the United States is one of the richest societies in the world,
mm-hmm.
It does have the capital flow
mm-hmm.
that allows for the kind of big investments. So I think one is the tax system.
Yes.
The second, I think, is a mind shift.
Yes.
You know, education, when you give, it's a cool thing
mm-hmm.
if you give as a major philanthropist in the U.S.,
absolutely.
A billion rand
absolutely.
To a
absolutely.
University.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't have that same culture here. I know,
no,
see,
we don't.
I know corporates in South Africa that will spend 100 million rand
yes.
for a golf tournament.
You're right, golf or soccer or whatever.
Or yes. soccer. But they will never think about giving
no,
100
no,
million
no,
rand investment.
No,
and
no.
I think that is something that requires a mind shift.
Yes.
In South African society. And I just think CEOs are not being particularly imaginative when they think those kinds of things through. I do think, by the way, that WITS is fortunate. Of South African universities, it has a very generous alumni base.
Yes.
And we have a strong tradition of giving.
Yes.
Although it's not on the same scale as many of the institutions in the U.S.,
yes.
there is a strong tradition of giving to WITS, and large parts of this institution
yes.
have been built by either corporate donations or private individual philanthropic donations, yes. and that's something that we should be very grateful for.
Do you think there would be any chance of you addressing this with the Minister of Finance to actually impregnate within the SAR system a tax relief? Because certainly mindsets are needed. But, I mean, a tax relief comes as a huge advantage. And I wonder if it's actually been addressed at the sort of ministerial levels that you routinely have access to.
I'm aware that Treasury has been mindful of this. They are aware of it. In fact, there's been big debates.
Yes.
Largely by the South African NGO sector.
Yes.
But also NGOs like Iniotello that interface with universities about trying to get a tax shift.
Yes.
And there has been some revision of the tax codes
yes.
that allow for it.
Yes.
But it's not on the same scale as the U.S.
No, no.
And therefore, it doesn't have the same dramatic effect.
Yes.
I also think, by the way, many vice chancellors in South Africa over the last 20 years have missed an enormous opportunity
yes.
at getting funding into the university. And that's through the BEEs.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these BEEs were meant to be broad-based.
Yes.
If they were meant to be broad-based, then we should have had a BEE system. Then we should have got universities as part of the BEE deal.
Yes.
We know in the last 10 years, we probably spent close to R1 trillion on BEE deals.
Yes.
If South African universities collectively would have got 10% of that,
yes.
that would have meant
awesome.
R100 billion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We could have been turning on
mm-hmm.
a 5% return rate,
mm-hmm.
something like $5 billion to $6 billion a year
mm-hmm.
for investment into the university system.
Absolutely.
It's something that we missed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real tragedy because I think we could have been more imaginative
mm-hmm.
in the way we approached BEE.
Yes. You are listening to Professor David Black, interviewing Professor Adam Habib, our Vice-Chancellor at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. You can reach us on telephone 0861 555 189, the Twitter handle at cliffcentral.com, Instagram Cliff Central, Facebook Cliff Central, WeChat ID Cliff Central, and my Twitter handle is at Starry Galaxy Man. Thank you, Paula Brigg, for this message. Your show is like a breath of fresh air. Well, there you go, Adam. People are really enjoying what we are saying. There's a question from Kagiso, which is totally unrelated to what we've currently been speaking about, but his question is a very interesting one. Kagiso Masikoming. Considering the recent events in the National Assembly and the Gauteng legislature concerning the EFF, do you think, Professor Habib, that the speaker chairperson should be a neutral person, in other words, with no political party affiliation, like a retired judge or law professor?
You know, if you asked me this question 5 years ago, I would have said no. And I would have said no because I thought I would have said that it's important for the MPs in the national legislature to choose somebody who could play the role of a more neutral, impartial chair.
Yes.
And I think for a period of time, we did and we're successful in getting some of that in the South African national legislature, particularly under President Mandela. I think we've lost that in recent years. And I think the current chair of the national legislature has not been really great. The Speaker of the Parliament has not been great in acting in an impartial and neutral manner. She acts, I think, there's not many times that I agree with Julius Malema, but on this one I think he's absolutely right. She's the Speaker of the ANC rather than the Speaker of Parliament. And in this context, I think one has to ask a hard question. If the MPs can't choose a neutral, impartial chair, then we should actually give them one. Because I think we're at the point where if you don't have an impartial, neutral chair, then the quality of the debate in the national legislature itself tends to become compromised. And I think that that's really one of the challenges that are emerging in this regard. I do think, more broadly, by the way, that the ANC has to start being careful not to immediately go to the, reflexively go to the defense of the president.
Yes.
I think the demand that the president must answer the question that the public protector put to her report is a reasonable one. Any reasonable democratic country would demand that of the president. And the ANC needs to be very careful that it doesn't blindly defend the president so that ultimately it lands up destroying the very institutions of democracy that it played such an important role in building. It's got a choice. I think it's fast approaching a choice where it's got to make a choice between its president and the party itself, between its president and the country as a whole. And I think it's important that the ANC starts having a hard deliberation on that question and the choices it needs to make in this regard.
Now, of course, you know the public protector rather well. I know she's been on debate with you at Wits University. Are you quite therefore alarmed, Adam, that there's sort of a blindish eye being turned to whatever she's asked in a very humble, sincere way to be addressed? Doesn't this concern you? Because it certainly concerned Clem Santer, whom I had as my guest just a little while ago, is that one has to go the high road, not the low road. The scenario of forward planning. Clem gave an example of South Africa, 25% chance of being a failed state, in quotes, but 75% of being, you know, top class. And Kagiso is just very worried in his questions about this sort of bias towards turning a blind eye to, you know, the public protector's requests.
I think it's outrageous. I think it's not only outrageous with regards to the public protector. I think it's outrageous with regards to the very Chapter 9 institutions that are mandated to protect the citizenry in this case.
Yes.
And so you're not only turning a blind eye to the public protector, who I think is somebody who's trying to do a really great job under very difficult circumstances, but what you're also doing is you're denuding the very institutions established by our Constitution at the dawn of our democracy to protect the citizenry itself.
Yes.
And that is a tragedy. Because what you're doing is, you know, the ANC and its current batch of MPs should realize that they carry a heavy mantle. They walk in the footsteps of a great tradition of activists in the ANC who played a phenomenal role in building a democratic society.
Absolutely.
And they must be respectful to that legacy they come from and not just be blinded by contemporary choices. They must reflect a little bit on what it means to walk the path of an ANC MP. And for me, I don't think that people are sufficiently thinking that through.
Yes.
I think that it's been disastrous that the president doesn't feel he's accountable to the citizenry or has to answer for this report. This is a R250 million misappropriation of funds.
It's incredible.
You should be saying, look, I need to answer for this. This is R250 million. It's not a couple of rands here or there.
No.
Therefore, in a context of the inequalities of our world, in a context where we're not funding so much that is necessary, it's absolutely important that this president and other ministers feel it incumbent that they answer questions that are posed to them in the national legislature by the representatives that the citizenry have chosen. The fact that the president didn't do that is outrageous.
You know, Adam, I couldn't really agree more. I mean, if you as vice chancellor were sitting and, you know, for example, 10 million rand was misappropriated, you'd certainly be held to account and you would want to be held to account. Yet Kagiso's concern is that, you know, there's this sort of blind eye which continuously gets turned and the request of the public protector is just being ignored. And I suppose having met Nelson Mandela several times, one was always struck by his deep concern for truth to be out, and one is not convinced that this is happening now.
No, absolutely. And I think that that's precisely why the leadership of the ANC has to rise to the occasion and make the hard choices that are required in this regard.
Now, you are listening to Professor David Block, and I am interviewing one of South Africa's greatest political scientists, an academic who's really highly respected around the globe, Professor Adam Habib. Just to give you an idea of how highly respected Professor Habib is, I was in touch last night with one of the world's largest banks, and I was in fact contacting the chairman of that specific bank, and I'm not going to mention names. But what was very interesting is I said to this chairman of the bank, I am interviewing Professor Adam Habib today, and he just said something like, awesome, I have the greatest respect for him. And I think that speaks volumes. We have another question from Jackson, and this is a completely different issue, Adam. He wants to know, what are your views, firstly as VC, and secondly as a person, what are your views on being gay?
Well, I answer the question both in simultaneously, both
Thank
as
you.
VC and as a person.
Thank you.
I think that people are entitled. I mean, our constitution is utterly clear on this.
Yes.
That we need to respect people's sexual preferences.
Yes.
It's been very. I think that that was a major progress for this society. There are clearly challenges in our society around this question. We do know that gay people are being attacked in parts of our country.
Yes.
And in particular communities. This is something that we need to address carefully.
Yes.
We need to address it and make sure that we begin to bring it under control. we do know that in parts of this continent, in fact, the vast majority of governments on this continent do not recognize sexual preferences of their citizens. And that is just outrageous. We need to be heard on this thing, both with those governments in bilaterals and in the engagements in the African Union around this question. I must say, in part, I'm gratified being at Wits University, because Wits has a very strong tradition of respecting gay rights, and it has a very strong movement of students and staff in the institution in this regard. And so for me, this is natural. It's part of the very diversity of our society and our world.
Yes.
And it's a natural occurrence. There's no difference between people's differences around sexual orientation as it is around their racial backgrounds or their gender backgrounds or their class backgrounds or their religious and cultural backgrounds.
Yes. We have a question, Adam, from Brad, and he said, the ANC are petrified, I'm quoting now, reading, quote, the ANC are petrified because someone is talking for the people, meaning Malema, and standing up to their mafia organization, unquote. Again, I suppose we've discussed this at some length, but it is a rather interesting way of putting it, even though I'm not wearing any political hat today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that Malema has begun to play the role of the leader of the opposition.
Yes.
By default rather than by design. There's clearly questions about his own credibility in this regard.
Yes.
And sometimes he does end up making the most outrageous statements.
Yes.
But to be honest, on this question, he's begun to hold the state accountable.
Yes.
And frankly, one of the jobs of the leader of the opposition is to ensure that they are holding the ruling party accountable.
Yes.
And I cannot think of a more important issue
yes.
to hold the president accountable than the saga in Nkandla and holding him accountable to pay back the money that the public protector says he should be paying.
Yes. Yes. Very interesting thought indeed. Adam, I'd like us now in the final sector of the show, if you could describe to us, perhaps it might be difficult, but to describe to us your leadership style, because all I can say is, having joined Wits in 1984 and having served under many or several vice chancellors and their deputies, you have certainly just turned the boat upside down, as it were, and given this incredible breath of fresh air. Wits is now so highly ranked on the global scale. How would you describe to our listeners your leadership style? Hands on, hands off? I'd love to know more.
Well, let me say firstly, I think, and thank you for some of your remarks. I mean, I must say that firstly, I think institutions, they are always different kinds of leaders. And there's sometimes leaders who lead from the front. There are others who are more reserved and can lead from the back and get people to lead, and they simply operate in the background. And both kinds of leadership can be important for institutions in different life cycles.
Yes.
Sometimes you need a vice chancellor that is, or a leader that is more hands-off and maintain a kind of maintenance function in an institution that is running well.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, you may very well need a leader who's interventionist, who leads and gets their hands dirty, who has forced to make and enable hard choices to be made, because an institution requires that at a particular moment in their life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that if you look at Wits, which has had great leaders over the last 92, 93 years, there were different types of leaders.
That is true.
In that life cycle of the organization. Mm-hmm. My view is, I think that Adam Habib is much more hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
He leads from the front.
Mm-hmm.
I'm particularly attracted to the idea, particularly in a university like Wits, for the institution to be at the forefront of public discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like to ensure that we create an enabling environment for that.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of the things that I've, you know, my own understanding of South Africa suggests that you, if you want to be a leader in South Africa today, you need to understand hard choices that need to be made. Mm-hmm. Because every choice has a consequence.
Yes, absolutely.
And you need to understand those trade-offs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that you need to understand context. Mm-hmm. That context is absolutely important. If you're running Harvard University or Oxford University or Wits University in 2014, you're going to have very different leadership styles in those very institutions.
Absolutely.
Because the context
are
so very different. So for me, I would describe myself as hands-on, mm-hmm. much more interventionist. Mm-hmm. I wish at a particular point to be less interventionist than I am. But I do think that at this historical moment, which does require somebody who's prepared to get their hands messy and try to understand how to make sure that emissions policies work or how to get the IT system working or to put to address concerns of students and staff because that is important and those challenges need to be addressed. Mm. I said, you know, I previously said to politicians and sometimes to leaders of municipalities, you can't become a world-class city unless you do the small things correctly.
That's
unless
correct.
You make the lights work.
That's correct.
You cut the grass. Mm-hmm. You get the potholes fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
that. Mm-hmm. You can't be a world-class university if you don't have admissions working, if you don't have the IT system working, if you don't have wireless facilities working, if you don't do the simple things properly.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, in the next couple, 2-3 years, we have to make sure that the simple things work.
Mm.
Because I do think that the Wits gets some of the big things happening but it needs to get some of the small things working if it wants to be world-class.
You are hearing Professor Adam Habib, Vice Chancellor at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. I am Professor David Block. We are looking up together. Our phone numbers are 0861 555 189. My Twitter handle at Starry Galaxy Man, and the Twitter feed here in studio in Rivonia is at cliffcentral.com. Adam, I'd like to also just reflect for a moment, if I may, on a statement Mr. Mandela once made, which is, of course, very famous now, is that to attend university is a privilege, not a right. Your thoughts on that?
So, look, I do think that we need to increase the numbers of our students that are coming out of our schooling system and are having some opportunity to move into a postgraduate, a post-secondary education system.
Mm-hmm.
That might mean an FET college. It might mean a vocational school.
Mm-hmm.
It might mean a university, or it might mean a teaching college.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do is have a variety of post-secondary options available.
Yes.
And that because I think it's important because if you want to succeed as a knowledge-based economy, then you need people with skill sets that go beyond simply those produced at the school level.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, having those options is absolutely central if we are going to be successful as a country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think for the foreseeable future, going to university is going to be a privilege. It is going to be about creating elites.
Mm-hmm.
And the real trick that we should be interested in is not to stop ourselves from creating elites, but to say that we want to create elites from a variety of sources.
Yes.
We want poor communities to have the access to creating elites as much as we have rich communities who can create elites.
Yes.
We want communities that are white and black and yellow and green, Jewish and Christian, and all kinds of possibilities in between.
Yes.
Everybody must have the opportunity to create an elite,
and
our public institutions must try and enable that.
Now, Adam, of course, what worries me at this juncture is, for example, I have 250 students in first year, and I notice that several of the students are... their marks or their matric symbols have somewhat been tampered with because, you know, if somebody comes to Wits with an A, one expects that there should be a certain degree of basic skills and knowledge. Does it not concern you that there's been so much talk about tampering with the actual matric symbols being upped or increased?
Yeah, I do think that what was happening, and we do know that what was happening, was that if you were part of the public schooling system, you were getting an additional couple of points.
Yes.
Percentage points to enhance your degrees. I think that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I do know that as of now, that's no longer going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some reforms that are beginning to already take place.
I see.
I do think also that we need to get some kind of debate going around what is the pass mark and what is the fail mark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think even though it's correct that, you know, on a 30% you do not get access to university.
Yes.
A bachelorette pass does require a 50% aggregate.
Yes.
Even there, I think that we have to say that somebody coming with a 50% pass rate,
yes,
does not have sufficient skill sets,
yes,
that are required at the university.
Yes.
Level. And
yes.
So we're going to have to grapple with that challenge.
Yes.
And
yes.
We need to start getting this right. And we have to start putting pressure on the Department of Education to start getting the primary and secondary
yes.
education system
yes.
right. Having said that,
mm-hmm.
I do think that for the foreseeable future, whether we like it or not,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have students that are not going to be sufficiently adequately qualified.
Yes, this
or
is
have
true.
The adequate skill mm-hmm. sets. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have to start adapting our teaching at the university to address the kind of challenges we confront. Mm-hmm. We have to strike the right balance, however.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we compensate too much, we can undermine the very quality of education itself. And so we have to get the balance right if we're going to achieve the kinds of professionals we want to achieve for the economy and the society we want to build. Mm-hmm.
Adam, you know, I'm sure that multitudes of our listeners would be very interested perhaps to have an answer to this question, which you may or may not have been asked before. What keeps Adam Habib awake at night? What is your, well, let me not add any more. What keeps Adam Habib awake at night? What do you think about? What is your, what keeps you awake?
Well, you know, I mean, what keeps me awake is, can we succeed?
Yes.
And, you know, we've got some incredible challenges.
Yes.
But we also got some incredible possibilities.
Yes.
I think South Africa is in a very special place.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of ways, ironically, we represent hope in a world that has gone wrong.
That's wonderful.
I mean, I think that if you just think about the fact that in 1994, when no one else expected us to pull it off,
yes,
that we did.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
We have a special place in the imagination of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, us getting it right
mm-hmm.
is would have such massive ripple effects around
absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. However, if we fail, it also has a magnified effect
mm-hmm.
around the world. And it was captured, I suspect, I don't necessarily always agree with the statistical numbers on it, but it was captured when you suggested that Clem Sumter had said, we have a 35% chance
yes.
of being world class.
Yes.
And we have a 25% chance
yes.
of being a failed state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's exactly what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
We can either be a spectacular success
mm.
or a spectacular failure.
Mm. That's profound.
And for us, it's absolutely essential
mm.
that we get it right.
Mm.
And to get it right means hard choices. It means
mm-hmm.
hard choices by government,
mm-hmm.
but it also means hard choices by the corporate sector and the CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
It means hard choices by vice chancellors.
Mm-hmm.
And it means hard choices by us as a collective.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's absolutely, do we have the courage
mm-hmm.
to make hard choices? You know, Nelson Mandela in 1993 was struck with a choice.
Mm-hmm.
When Chris Hani was murdered,
mm-hmm.
the world, this country could have burned. And he was angry. And Chris Hani was like a child to him, like a son to him.
Mm-hmm.
What does he do? He walks away from the prospect of heightening temperature,
mm.
of burning this country,
mm.
and says,
mm.
we're going to use this opportunity to make hard choices.
Mm.
And that's that fundamental decision that changed our
mm.
society.
Mm. Mm.
And I think that we're at that point again,
mm.
when all of us collectively,
mm.
in the universities, in government, in mm. the private sector,
mm.
have to make hard choices.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to have the courage to make those hard choices to avoid a spectacular failure and achieve a world-class solution.
What is your gut feeling at night when you lie awake and think, you know, will we be a success? What is your, you know, often gut feelings just tell and reveal so much, Adam. Do you feel that the country's willing to make the sort of hard choices needed in the light of what we discussed earlier with Malema and others? Hard choices. Are we ready as a nation to make the sort of hard choices, a yea is yea and a nay is nay, with regard to moving us to a spectacular success?
You know, in a lot of ways, I'm optimistic. If you ask me on balance, I'm optimistic.
Yes.
And I'm optimistic not because I believe that we don't have leaders in our midst who will make the wrong choices. I'm sure that we will. But as a collective,
yes,
I think we're beginning to realize that we are approaching a moment where hard choices have to be made. You know, I speak to CEOs. We might not always agree, but all of us agree that things cannot continue as usual.
Yes.
When I speak to cabinet ministers, we might not always agree, but all of them I know that I speak to know that we cannot, it can no longer be business as usual. And it seems to me that realization is seeping across the spectrum. And for me, the hope is, by the way, the young people in our society. Because although they're angry and sometimes they react angrily to issues, when I watch them at Wits University and many other universities in this country, I see people who are intent on changing their world for the better. I sat in the election circus the other day, where we're choosing the election circus of the SRC. And there were three groups, the PYA, Project W, and the EFF. And the thing that I was utterly thrilled by was that all three groups had people across the racial divide, across the religious divide, across the class divide, in all three groups. And yes, they have differences. And yes, they'll debate and fight. But the fact that slowly but surely our society is beginning to non-racialize is perhaps the best evidence that today South Africa is in a far better place than it's ever been.
You've been listening to Professor Adam Habib, the Vice Chancellor at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. Adam, it has been a singular honor to have you on our show. It has been amazing to talk to you, to tap into your immense wisdom. And all of us at cliffcentral.com can only wish you at the university a spectacular success. Thank you so much for joining us today as we play out with Enya.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.